Here we are for another episode of The Wrap. That was a great intro.
I'm leaving that.
We kind of like slid into it there, didn't we?
We did. That was great.
I felt like we were at the news desk and we're like spun our chair and like. No, here we are for another episode of The Wrap. And as you will notice, folks, we have classed the place up today.
We do. We've got beautiful succulents.
Guys, word of the day. I feel like we should. Braden watches a show called Dude Perfect, and they have a segment called Overtime, and they've started here recently doing like the word of the day for the overtime.
Okay.
Today, our word, succulent. These are succulents. Now, they are fake. They're not real, but I did see their day. Mm. I think it's actually just today.
Even the real ones look fake to me, though.
Yes, so. They do. Because I was just getting ready to say that. I randomly came across something today. In some email that I got, and it said live succulents. I'm like, they still look like they're fake. So, okay. Anyways, we're classing to join up. We've got our succulents here with us, so hopefully that will raise the level.
Yeah, we're credible now.
Very, very credible. I mean, we've got succulents in the studio. We've got all kinds of stuff going on. But today, we get to talk about one of probably not just my, but many people's favorite Bible. Like one of the most, I said this.
Yeah. Probably one of the most well-known.
I think it's at least one of the
right
most well-known.
Right up there with Noah's Ark.
Of the Old Testament, if not the entire Bible. And that is David and Goliath. And what do you think it is about this story that makes it so memorable?
I think everybody roots for the underdog.
All right, so there's an underdog element to
there
it
is,
for sure.
There is. Not that that's what that's about.
We'll talk about that later, right?
I think that's why that allures people.
Like, yeah, it's like it's the
underdog. This little guy takes on the world.
Against
you know?
The giant. Yeah. It's the impossible meets oh, what happened?
Yeah.
What else? What else do you think is so shocking and memorable about this story that really gets people? I mean, like I said, because I think that even people who aren't churched.
Yeah.
Like, if you mention David and Goliath, even honestly, if they've never read David and Goliath out of the Bible,
they'll at least know somewhat what you're talking about.
There are so many cultural references to David and Goliath in sports, in business, whatever it may be, that people attach themselves to this concept and really feel like they know this story of David and Goliath. Anything else you can think of that really just like jumps out and be like, this is why it's memorable. I mean, I think as well, too, like just the courage and bravery of David in the moment, who really was no more than a teenager. Bonus tip, by the way, I didn't say this on Sunday, but so a lot of people be like, well, Ryan, how do you know or suspect that he was just a teenager? I know that to be the case because scripture is clear with references to people who, if you were 20 years old or older, you were conscripted for all kinds of different service, military or otherwise, and David wasn't.
Yeah, everybody had to serve.
Everybody had 20 years or older, male, you were serving in the military, and David wasn't doing that. Now, he was, it says in story, going back and forth, and he eventually, because he was such a help to Saul, became an armor bearer, but it almost seems like it was an emergency case or a special case that David found himself in the palace. That's why we know pretty clearly that he was a teenager.
There's another reason I can think of.
Okay, what's another reason?
This is nothing like super studious.
You're like, this is going to be super spiritual. Everybody hold on for this moment right here.
But what other age group do you know that would go so defiantly
into the face
and not care about their well-being as much as a teenager?
Seems like, very much.
Give it to me. Seems, you know? Very, it does. It seems.
I don't
very
know what
teenagers.
Generation we are on now. I've always felt like I'm behind on generations, but it seems very Gen X, Gen Z, Millennial. Just
it does. It does.
Like, just those younger generations. On. Like, you know what? I'm taking the world.
Move over, you old fogies. I'm taking this
gone.
Thing.
Yeah, right. And that's the way that David approaches Goliath.
Now we know that's not. It's not because his teenagerness that he did that, but...
But it might have something to do with it. I really don't know. Which
I don't know that an adult would have hit that with the same
gusto.
You know
what? You know, you started that with the idea that that was going to be the least spiritual thing that you possibly said today, but I think that there's a great application in that because I've never really thought about that, or I've only thought about that a little bit. But as you say that, I'm thinking to myself, there is something to that. Because as teenagers, we are far more prone to risk. Because what is there to lose?
We are invincible.
We're invincible. Yeah. We've got the rest of our life.
Yeah.
If we mess something up. It seems that as we become older, we become a lot more risk averse.
Mm.
I'm not gonna do that because and we do it for good reasons. Yeah. Like, you know, for me, I have three kids at home, you know, middle school and below. And it's like, you know, I gotta really test a lot of stuff against that and what, you know, not that I sit and like idolize my family like they are, you know, but like I have to operate and make decisions based on not just myself.
Yeah.
But on my entire family. And we know this about David's life, really, don't we? That David, number one, and we know this for a case, because the word that is used for him in 1 Samuel 16 is that he is just the runt of the litter. And I think in a lot of cases that David is really just the outcast. He's ostracized. He's literally forgotten about in his own family. So he feels, I think, in a sense, kind of alone. Like, I'm by myself anyways. Yeah. I'm doing my own thing.
What
do I have to lose? Yeah. I mean, like, seriously. I go out there, and this Goliath picks up his boot, and he stomps me and makes a hole out of me into the ground. I doubt that anybody in my family is really going to care all that much. but I think people who are courageous and brave in their faith and in Christ take risks like that.
Mm, yeah.
And they will say things, they would maybe have a feeling of, if no one else would care that I would go away today or that I would do something stupid today, the payoff is so much greater than if I fail.
Yeah.
Because if this pays off and God shows up and I get every sense that David believes God will show up and he will be present and I kick the tail of this Philistine, this is going to change everything.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if there was in David, like, in the back of his mind, he thought to himself, this is going to make a really great story someday. And even if he thought that, I don't think he could have even captured how popular the story would be thousands of years later.
Yeah.
You know? And so I think you saying that, there's a lot to that. Teenagers, young people, and the younger you are, it seems like the more willing you are to take risks.
Yeah.
But the older we get, the less willing
Not
we
to
are.
Mention, you ask a couple times. What do I get if I do this?
Yeah, but I think this. That's an interesting thing. And that was actually part of my study.
King's daughter, you know.
That was part of my study. And I didn't bring it out on Sunday. But I just don't think David was really motivated by that at all.
I don't think so either.
Now, it's interesting that he does. He asks what that reward is. And I think maybe he asked for this reason. This is my suspicion. And he does ask on a couple of occasions, like, what's the reward again? And the reward, you'll remember, for defeating this Philistine Goliath is that you'll get the king's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
You will, in a sense, be taken into the royal family.
Right.
You will not have to pay taxes the rest of your life, and you will be wealthy beyond your wildest dreams. Sounds like a pretty good thing. But I think what David was thinking in his mind was, and nobody has taken the king up on this offer?
I'm glad you brought that up, because I think that's true. I think he was probably bewildered of...
Why has nobody at least tried?
Of all
of these people, not one of you at least has tried to do this. I think it's just shocking to him. It's appalling to him, honestly, that nobody has come out and tried that. So I think David is
like, and you can see his indignation, not necessarily his people, but the fact that who is this?
Oh yeah, that's the whole thing that spurred
Philistine him. That is defiling. My God, you know why?
I love the way
that was his.
I love the way some transitions do it. They're like this uncircumcised Philistine.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, this is getting personal.
Yeah, it's getting real.
This has got real and personal. So yeah, I don't think David was in any way. I think 0% was he motivated by riches and fame and glory. I think he was motivated completely 100% by God's glory and what he perceived in this moment to be the cheapening or the destruction of God's glory. Like, yeah, he does. He comes in the camp. He's like, whoa, wait a minute.
Yeah, because what was at stake in his mind was not that Israel won or lost. It's whether or not God got the glory of...
It was all about
because
that.
Because that's what was at stake here was, you know, if God doesn't show up, God looks bad.
Yep.
Right? Or, you know, so... I'm sure that's where he knew, God's not going to look bad in front of all
this. Yeah, no.
He's going to get the glory on this.
It was never about riches. It was about glory. By the way, that's a song, isn't it, right? You get the glory in this. I can't remember who sings it.
I don't know. It sounds like a good song.
I know it's a song. We'll look for that one.
Don't sing too much of it. We'll get flagged on YouTube.
Oh, sheesh. Yeah. Sorry about that. We are really infamous here lately for, I think actually everybody is. Every church is fighting the battle right now of the copyright infringement, so. Reminds me of that.
We do have licensing. It's okay.
Yes, we do. Yeah. That's covered by our CCLI, so we're fine there. But if we find that and deem that to be very important, we'll maybe link that in the show notes there for you to listen to that song. But it is a good one. Yeah. I'll find it later. Remind me. But yeah, that's fascinating. I was thinking about something else. I totally lost the train of thought there as we were talking about this concept of a teenager just like going all the way with this one. Mm. But yeah, he wasn't motivated at all by riches. He was motivated 100% by God's glory, that he get this glory. I just want to take some time. One of the things we did on Sunday, and it's going to be hard to do this in this format, was to kind of try to illustrate a bit of how mammoth this guy, Goliath, was. I read so many different ideas and thoughts about how tall Goliath was, anywhere from about 6'9" to about just shy of 10 feet. And I'm thinking to myself, here's the deal. I'm probably about, on my best day, if I really stretch out, 6'2". It doesn't sound a whole lot, but if he is even at his minimum 6'9", it's a pretty imposing guy.
Yeah.
And like, I don't think he was some, like, I love sports. And I find anymore that, especially like, I do a lot of high school basketball into college. A lot of these kids that are like 6'9", 6'10", 6'11", and they weigh all of like 205 pounds, I'm like, that's like a rail, man. Like, yeah. I mean, that's insane that you were that stretched out, not tall, you weigh 205 pounds. I don't think Goliath.
You're tall, but you're going to blow away.
Exactly right. A big strong wind, you're gone. Yeah. I don't get the impression Goliath was that.
No.
Goliath.
Just the fact that he carried that much armor.
Yeah. He's carrying around, at estimates, 125 pounds of armor.
That's insane.
I mean, like, I'm struggling to lift 125 pounds. That's how embarrassing that is.
He fights with it.
He fights with that.
It's not just that I can lift it. It's, yeah.
The impression is this with Goliath. Even if he's 6'9", all of this bronze, and bronze is mentioned over and over and over again in the description of Goliath, because Philistine, by all accounts, was technologically superior to Israel. Yeah. They were the first ones to figure out how to work with metal and to fashion metal into weapons and to particularly work with bronze.
Yeah.
And everything about his...
they were bringing a firearm to a knife party.
To a knife party.
Yeah.
Except for he was bringing a sword to a sling fight. Yeah. And that was wrong in this day. We'll get to that again in a minute. The way I describe Goliath is not only that, but he's got all this stuff, and he's got his spear and his javelin, and he also has a sword, which most people actually think is more like a, you remember like in some of the Indiana Jones movies, like the guys have the scimitars, the curved blades?
Yeah.
I think it was actually more that is what it was. Irrelevant, really, for our purposes, but I always like to just throw the
word. But we're painting the picture.
Yeah, I mean, this is bonus information you don't have to pay for, all right? Anyways, he has an armor bearer in front of him who is carrying probably the equivalent of like the size of a 6-foot folding table as a shield in front of him. Well, somebody actually likened it to not just a 6-foot table, but like a door. Like by the way, they're like, I'm actually more impressed with that guy who's carrying around a door in battle versus Goliath.
Yeah, and the first one out in battle.
Exactly. Right. He's leading the way. So he's a walking tank.
Yeah.
I mean, he's impenetrable. He is undefeatable, as it seems, or so it seems in this story. And like I said, everything about him is painted to be impressive. And then here comes David, and he's bringing what?
He brought lunch.
He brought lunch, number one. Yeah, he was
on it to me to think about the food.
Though. He was on a sandwich run for his dad and the brothers, but what does he bring
chopping
to the
off
battle?
Some Jimmy John's.
Yeah. Freaky Fast, by the way.
Yeah, Freaky Fast.
He was Freaky Fast at both battle lines.
Oh, gosh.
He brings what to the battle?
A sling.
A sling. Now let's
not a slingshot.
Thank you.
Yes.
Please, I feel like so often people think of this story and they're like, so David was like bringing like, bing. No. Mm-mm. sling. A sling was a leather pouch that had two ropes or some sort of a tail off of it. And what would happen is you would wrap that that stone, and we'll get to that in just a minute because there's some cool information with that. Wrap it in that pouch and wrap it up, and you'd start to sling those or swing those that pouch around, and you would let go of one of those pieces of rope, and it would project it out of the pouch, and also letting go of that rope in the right way would also put spin on it too. Like highly skilled.
Yeah.
This isn't a kid going out here just like, oh, this is fun. Oh, you know, no, he is highly skilled, fine-tuned and precise with this. I was talking about the actual stones. We often think of like little stones. They're like little fake stones here and these succulents here. And like, we often think,
he picked up a few rocks. Is what you think.
Yeah, like he went to the creek and picked up some good skipping rocks, and he was about ready to do battle. No, in fact, the many excavations in that area have found thousands upon thousands of these sling stones, and they are the size of like a tennis ball.
It's like a mini cannonball.
Mini cannonball, weighed about a pound each, and in the right hands with skilled people. You remember what I said on
Sunday? Shooting croquet balls at him.
Basically, shooting croquet balls at what speed? Do you remember what I said on Sunday?
It's like 170.
100 to 150 miles an hour.
That's insane.
I mean, the best Major League Baseball players are slinging a baseball, which is probably roughly the size of what this stone was. The best pitchers are pitching at about, at the tops, 100, maybe a little north of 100 miles an hour. I believe David was probably slinging that thing closer to 150 miles an hour. That was doing some damage when it came in and sunk right into Goliath's head.
Yeah.
But he understands this, and this is a whole really kind of where this, I think the story turns, because we talked at the beginning is, what's the point of the story? Is it that the underdog can always triumph if they have enough faith, or that, you know, big people aren't that big and they can be taken down? No.
How to stick it to the man at work. No.
None of that stuff is the point, the main point, or even I would argue the secondary or the, here's a fancy word, tertiary point.
Ooh.
That's third. Third point. Yeah.
Bringing out all the big words today.
I am succulent, tertiary. I'll try to throw another one in later. I don't even think those are even the second or third points of this whole story. The story is this, and it comes in the fact that David doesn't feel like, I've outwitted this guy. I've got a sling. No, in every sense of looking at it, like, this is stupid.
Yeah.
How are you going, even with tennis-sized ball or tennis ball-sized stones weighing about a pound each being slung at 150 miles an hour, what if I miss? Nobody ever talks about this, but why in the world, what's the significance? There's got to be something there. Why did he pick up five? Because he was thinking to himself, I missed the first time. I got four.
You don't want to be searching for a sling stone.
I got four in the chamber, I'm ready to go.
It'd be like going into battle with one bullet, you know?
Stupid. You miss, you're done. You're toast. Anyways, I think he understands this. It's not about me. It's not about the sling. It's not about the stone. It's about everything that God has prepared me to do to this point. And most importantly, it's about God. Because you remember what David says. He goes, you come out here with sword and javelin, spear, your nastiness. I come at you what? In the name
of God.
Of the Lord.
Yeah.
I mean, I can imagine Goliath just looked at me like, what? That's stupid.
Yeah.
Well, he thought it was stupid until he got a stone right between the eyes.
Yeah.
David understands in this entire story, it's not about me being an underdog and you being a giant and me taking you down. It's about God.
The power of God.
And the power of God being on our side. And here's the thing. It's don't then take it to the nth degree and be like, well, with God on our side, we can do anything. No, it was very important on Sunday. Our main thought was what? With God,
anything is possible. Right.
Does it mean that it's
not that God will give you everything?
It's not definite or maybe even probable, but it is possible. And I think that things done in God's way, in God's time, prepared by God, planned by God, 100% of the time succeed.
Yeah.
And I really feel like David knew that. We talked a lot on Sunday about the concept of how God had prepared David for that moment and to be king later on. Do you remember what a couple of those things were that God used to prepare him?
Maybe I wasn't in there for that part. But
two things we talked about.
Because I was running around sound for
yes,
you.
Yes, I remember you were. Yeah. Two things we talked about are, number one is he just so happens to do an internship in the palace with Saul.
Because yes,
remember,
Saul's
going mad.
He loses his mind.
His mind. David comes to play the harp. He eventually becomes his armor bearer.
Right.
I believe what God is doing is getting David prepared right under the nose of Saul to be king. Secondarily, this is the thing we would notice the least, is the pasture is exactly where God prepared David.
I do remember you talking about that. Yeah.
Yes. That was the big kind of point was the pasture. Don't waste your pasture. Don't forsake your pasture. Don't get tired of the pasture, because that's where God is preparing you, wherever it's at.
Yeah.
That monotonous, I'm living in obscurity moment. Yeah. Like,
we
that's,
often forget that, though, don't we? We forget that a lot of God's working in our life is in the process, not the destination.
Yep.
We get so wrapped up in, well, when I get here.
Yeah, when I make it.
When I make it.
I'm on the big stage.
Yeah. And we forget. We're learning
a
lot.
David was never on a big stage until the moment. And even, like, he didn't even realize probably how big of a stage it was when he was there with Goliath. Now, obviously, when he becomes king, that's a big stage, too. And he's like,
it's
I get this one. But God was always preparing David, whether it be in the palace. But I think even more than the palace, I think bigger than that is him being in the pasture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where do you think he learned
it? Well, and that's exactly where he pulls his response to Goliath. I mean, it wasn't,
Buddy, I've been killing lions and bears to protect the flock, and you are nothing.
I've been preparing like this for
years. Where do you think
years.
He learned how to spin and swing that sling?
Yeah.
Right out there. And doing that and protecting that flock. And so God all the way, when you see the story from that perspective and look back, you're like, oh, it makes perfect sense. He was the absolute perfect person to do this. No one saw him coming. Yeah. No one saw him as a threat, but he had been prepared and made for that moment right there to take that giant down. And so the story really isn't about, it's not even about David, honestly. And most of the time what we do is like, oh, I see myself in this story. I can be a David. I can take down my giants. I'm going to make this really short because we're kind of running short on time. You are not David. David is not you. Jesus is David. And the only way that you or I or you are able to face enemies and giants in our life is because Jesus has already beat them.
Yeah.
He has defeated what we talked about on Sunday was he's defeated the two greatest enemies in our life, sin and death. And I would put with that separation from God in our lives. You can't get any worse than that. You cannot get in any bigger of a hole than that. You can't face a bigger giant. And so because Jesus has done that through his death on the cross and his resurrection to new life, he has given us a way to defeat all of our lesser enemies in life.
Yeah.
But we don't do that. We don't beat our enemies. We don't take down our giants. Jesus has done that, and Jesus enables us to do that today. So let that be a little lesson to everybody, and hopefully that helps you to see, looking from that perspective, that I see the story completely different now, because of what Jesus has done, he has enabled you in your life to what I call them sin's cronies, the little hirelings, the little underlings that go around. You know, even the worst things that we face in our life are just the little cronies of sin and death.
Well, and that's that whole thing with Christ saying the kingdom has come. You know, we see that, and it's here, but it's not fully here, you know, like it's establishing on here on earth, and that's part of it, right? Like Jesus has defeated the ultimate enemy.
Yeah.
And now we're just cleaning up the messes, you know, like,
yep.
And he's given us the authority.
We're just brushing off the little.
Yes, yeah.
You know, that is so true too, because
there's the little
really
cities, you know?
Big things that we face in our life. I mean, we fear death, we fear the future, we fear disease, we fear all these things, you know, financial failure and collapse and stuff. And those are all big, true issues. But really in the grand scheme of everything and in eternity and our eternity and our souls, those are just minor issues that Jesus says, okay, that's fine. Okay, don't freak out about this. That's why Jesus says constantly, don't worry, don't have anxiety, because I've already beat that.
Yeah.
I've already beat the greater things so that the lesser things don't mean anything in your life.
Yeah.
That's what he says. And so I really hope that's an encouragement to you. And I really hope that that's just helps you kind of for the rest of the day, at least, you know, because I know tomorrow will be a new day and we'll have new anxieties. That's what Jesus says, too, is at least for the rest of the day, you can kind of walk a little straighter and have the head a little higher because, you know, Jesus has already fought my battles. He's already won the bigger battles. And that my littler battles, he's still with me in them and can do the same thing in those little battles too. So I hope you take that to the bank. Hope you take it to heart. And until we see you guys again, God bless.
See you guys.